Coming up in the next 60 minutes, Transport Minister Leo Varadkar will be here to talk about new road safety plans, but he'll also be discussing the implications of the Anglo tapes and the country's return to recession. Plus, a move to stop charity shops from opening on Dublin's Grafton Street. Snobbery or common sense? A windfall for a Limerick farmer who buys back land he sold at the top of the boom. And Des Cahill will be here to look ahead to the weekend sport.
It's 8 o'clock on Friday the 28th of June on RTÉ Radio 1. You're listening to Morning Ireland with Rachel English and Cathal McCullough.
The news headlines. The German Chancellor Angela Merkel has said the tone and content of recorded conversations between Anglo-Irish bank executives are impossible to stomach. The British government has backed an IVF plan which uses DNA from three people to create a baby. And Gardaí have warned motorists that Friday is the most dangerous day of the week on Irish roads. The news is read by Clodagh Walsh.
The German Chancellor Angela Merkel has said she regards the taped conversations of Anglo-Irish bank executives with contempt. She was responding to the publication in the Irish Independent this week of transcripts of conversations from 2008 between managers at the bank, which have caused outrage at home and abroad. She said the conversations were damaging to democracy and made it harder for policymakers to convince their citizens to support aid for struggling European partners. Dr. Merkel was speaking to journalists in Brussels at the end of the first day of an EU leaders' summit. A spokesman for the Taoiseach has said that the issue of the Anglo-Irish bank tapes was not raised at any level during last night's summit. From there, our Europe correspondent Paul Cunningham.
The German Chancellor Angela Merkel came to Brussels in order to discuss, among other things, how to tackle high levels of youth unemployment in EU countries like Ireland by spending billions of euro on back-to-work programmes. However, it was inevitable she be asked about her reaction to the ongoing revelations in the Irish Independent, including an Anglo-Irish executive singing Deutschland, Deutschland über alles, as a colleague joked about German money flowing into Ireland after the government's bank guarantee. In a brief but pointed response, the Chancellor said the recordings were damaging democracy, the social market economy and everything we strive for. Ms. Merkel said it was already an incredible challenge for EU leaders to convince people who get up every morning to do their work, who always pay taxes, who even show solidarity with others who are weaker. She said the recordings were therefore damaging, adding, "This is why I regard this with contempt." Paul Cunningham, RTÉ News, Brussels.
EU leaders have agreed on new steps to fight youth unemployment and promote lending to credit-starved small business. The plan was approved at their summit in Belgium. The 27 leaders agreed to spend 6 billion euro over the next 2 years to support job creation, training and apprenticeships for young people. The leaders also approved plans for the European Investment Bank to lend hundreds of billions of euros to small and medium-sized enterprises. Britain could become the first country in the world to permit babies to be born with three genetic parents by the end of next year. A decision by the Department of Health opens the door to controversial treatments for inherited diseases that make use of donated DNA from a second donor mother. Laura Fletcher reports.
Experts say three-person IVF could eliminate debilitating and potentially fatal mitochondrial diseases that are passed on from mother to child. Mitochondria have been described as cells' battery packs, tiny rod-like bodies in the cell that provide it with energy. Defective mitochondria affect 1 in every 6,500 babies. It can result in potentially life-threatening conditions, including a form of muscular dystrophy, hearing and vision loss, heart, lung and liver problems. Research suggests that using mitochondria from a donor egg can prevent the diseases. It would result in babies having DNA from two parents and a tiny amount from a third donor, as the mitochondria themselves have their own DNA. The UK Chief Medical Officer, Professor Dame Sally Davies, has said that it's only right to introduce this life-saving treatment as soon as possible. However, critics say it's unethical and that the move would mark a slippery slope leading to designer babies. Draft regulations will be produced later this year.
The US Senate has approved a bill to reform immigration law. The proposed legislation includes a path to citizenship for an estimated 11 million undocumented immigrants in the United States. It will now go to the House of Representatives, where there is strong opposition to immigration reform. The Taoiseach and Minister for Foreign Affairs and Trade, Eamon Gilmore, said the bill was another step closer towards addressing the problems faced by the undocumented Irish in the US. Gardaí are continuing to question a 26-year-old man arrested in connection with the deaths in County Kerry almost a fortnight ago of Yolantha Lubienia and her daughter Enrique. It's understood that Gardaí will have until lunchtime today before a decision will have to be made to charge or release the man after he opted to avail of a rest period overnight. The man, who is Lithuanian and was known to Miss Lubienia, was arrested yesterday morning at his home in Killorglin on suspicion of committing the double murders. Gardaí have warned motorists that Friday is the most dangerous day of the week on Irish roads. Almost a quarter of all road fatalities this year have occurred on a Friday. Crashes are more likely to happen between 2 p.m. and 6 p.m. than during any other period of the day. Chief Superintendent Aidan Reid of the Garda Traffic Corps says drivers can help themselves by wearing their seatbelt.
This year alone, 8 persons have died who, from investigations, were not wearing seatbelts. We're quite surprised at this, and again, it's an appeal to all road users, and particularly for rear seat passengers and front seat persons, to ensure that they always wear their safety belt.
Commuters have been able to board a train for the first time at a Dublin railway station in Blanchardstown that was completed 3 years ago. Hansfield Station, which cost €10 million to build and is on the Dunboyne railway line, was due to be up and running in 2010. But a road allowing access to the state-of-the-art station was never built, meaning it could not open. There have been numerous campaigns by local residents who claim they bought homes at the height of the property boom with the promise of a train station on their doorstep. After a number of failed start dates, the road was completed this year at a cost of €1 million. The first train stopped at the station just before 7 o'clock this morning. And now the time is 6:30 past 8. Rain and drizzle in parts of the north and west this morning will spread to the rest of the country this morning and afternoon. It'll be generally cloudy and mild today. Highest temperatures will range from 14 to 17 degrees.
Caroline Murphy joins us with what it says in Friday's papers.
Setback for hopes of recovery as state enters recession. That's the headline on the front of the Irish Times today. We're told that in the first 3 months of this year, the fall in consumer spending on the previous quarter was the largest on record, while the decline in exports was the second biggest since figures were compiled first in 1997. And analysing it in the business section, Dan O'Brien is downbeat. Yesterday's economic numbers were ugly, he says in a piece headlined, "Economy Data Paints Uniformly Grim Picture." A fairly grim picture painted on the front of the Examiner this morning too. It's more on the drug stories, which were in the news yesterday, and today the headline is "High Cost of Drugs Sees Rise in Sale of Fake Pills." We're told that a Europe-wide crackdown on the sale of black market medications found more than 192,000 types of illegal drugs in Irish border searches. Fiacro Cioni says the potentially dangerous medications were seized last week and they're estimated to be worth €612,000. He says the Irish Patients Association said prices, not ignorance, are forcing people to buy illegally online. It's the price of health cover, meanwhile, which makes the lead story in the Irish Independent today. Charlie Weston says a new breed of no-frills health insurance is set to ignite a price war between providers for the first time in years. He says insurance giants are poised to offer a range of stripped-down plans for a reduced price. Inside, in a comment piece, Weston says of the prospect, it's the best piece of news hard-pressed families have had in ages. The downside, he says, is that not all hospitals will be covered and that some procedures will not be covered. But he says the hope is that the price war will have the effect of slowing down the number of families giving up their health insurance. Giving up hope and then life, it appears, Philip Wood. The Irish Daily Mail and the Irish Sun lead with, and the other papers find front page space for the deaths of Mr. Wood, his wife and his daughter in Spain. "Sorry," says the Mirror. "He thought it was the only way out," is the headline in the Mail. "Father's note said caring for family was too much," says the one in the Examiner. "And husband left note after shooting Irish wife and daughter," says the Irish Daily Star. We're told Sheila Wood was ill and that daughter Sophie required full-time care. The number of girls in state care here, meanwhile, who travelled abroad for abortions in the past 20 years gets attention in the Times today. 6 girls under the age of 18 in state care were assisted in travelling abroad for abortions on suicide grounds, says Mary Minahan in a front page story. She says the figures were revealed by Minister Francis Fitzgerald in response to a question from Billy Timmins. Inside the paper, there's another piece on Timmins confirming his intention to break government ranks and vote against the abortion legislation. While in The Independent, a Fia Kelly piece on page 18 is headlined, Fine Gael braced for more losses as abortion rebels gain strength. Alongside that, meanwhile, Kelly also reports that Lucinda Creighton's request for more time on the abortion debate so that she can speak after returning from EU business has been granted. He says, though, that there's still uncertainty in Fine Gael about how Ms. Creighton is going to vote. That Angela Merkel response to the Anglo tapes makes news this morning. The Independent finds front page space to report those comments in Brussels yesterday. I cannot but express my contempt at this, we're told, she said. And the paper also finds front page space to reflect the outpouring of goodwill and affection towards Nelson Mandela as crowds gathered in Pretoria. His time is coming, says the headline there. But finally this morning, the time is coming for summer holidays, of course, for those in national schools. And for the mammies too. On page 35 of The Independent, Barbara Scully says today her youngest child will walk out of the gates of her national school for the last time and she will have completed 21 years of being a junior school parent. And so, she says, she is done with 21 years of head lice notes, 21 years of cake sales, 21 years of the Trocara box, and 21 years of school tours, no uniform days, and €2 for this and that. The champagne will be popping in her corner of suburbia, she says, because she deserves it.
Thank you very much, Caroline. The time is 12 minutes past 8. In a moment, we'll be talking to Transport Minister Leo Varadkar about contempt as expressed by the German Chancellor for those Anglo tapes revelations. Also about a traffic bill which he's producing today, which is going to mean, among other things, testing for drug driving, and about a railway station which is opening in the Minister's constituency after a slight delay of 3 years. That's after this. Welcome back. You're listening to Morning Ireland at 8:15, and we're joined now from his home in the constituency of Dublin West by the Minister for Tourism, Transport and Sport, Leo Varadkar. Minister, good morning.
Good morning.
And obviously we'll have to begin with these remarks by Angela Merkel, the German Chancellor, during a press conference at the European Summit in Brussels last night. Let's listen to what she had to say about the Anglo tapes revelations as translated by an interpreter.
Die ihr Geld verdienen.
It's hard to digest for those who go to work every day. It is damaging democracy, social market economy and everything we strive for.
Und deshalb ist das auch für uns eine unglaubliche Herausforderung, weil zu die
That's why it's an incredible challenge for us to convince people who get up every morning to do their work, who always pay taxes, who even show solidarity with others who are weaker. It is damaging. This is why I regard this with contempt.
Angela Merkel speaking in Brussels last night. Leo Varadkar, would you add or subtract anything from what Angela Merkel had to say?
Well, I think I largely agree with her comments there. I think they're very, very prescient. The tapes are very damaging. There's no doubt about that. An awful lot has been done in the last 2 years to restore Ireland's reputation, whether it's the sacrifices that Irish people have made or the government's successful EU presidency or all the reforms that we've implemented in the last couple of years. And what these tapes really have done is reminded the world of the culture and the banking system that existed under the last Fianna Fáil government. And it's given us a real reminder of all that. And I think that's been very difficult for people.
What are you hearing, apart from the obvious party political point that you've made, but what are you hearing from your constituents, from people you meet, about what needs to happen and whether it's likely to happen?
Well, I suppose there's a few things. I don't think that people are all that surprised about the contents of the tapes. Most people have suspected for a very long time that the bankers in Anglo-Irish Bank deceived the regulator and fooled the government of the time. But I think what's really been gut-wrenching and has churned stomachs has been the tone of the tapes, the arrogance, the avarice and just the absolute disregard for the public. And what people are saying to me is that, first of all, they want there to be prosecutions. They're frustrated that they haven't happened so far. And I do my best to explain that three people have been charged, and we do expect there to be trials next year. But also people understand that prosecutions on their own won't be enough, because you can only prosecute people who committed a crime. And a lot of the people who contributed to the disaster and the crash that affected Ireland may not have been criminals, but they were incompetent, they were fools, they didn't do their jobs properly. And that's why people want a public inquiry. They want an inquiry so that these people are exposed and held to account, and also so that we can learn and understand better what happened and how it happened, so that, you know, those mistakes aren't repeated again. And that's the most important thing for future generations, is that we actually properly learn from what happened in Ireland between 2001 and 2008, so that it never happens again.
Doesn't the content quite favourable to the banks of the Code for People with Mortgage Arrears, the latest version of it, which emerged this week, show, as many people assert, that the banks are still ahead of the rest of us? They're still not exactly pushing everybody else around, but they're getting their way. They're an area which everyone, including government, are reluctant, for whatever reason, to be told, look, you've got to do something about this, and you've got to do it now.
No, I don't accept that at all. The first thing and the first principle of government policy is to make sure that people can stay in their homes. And that's why there have been so few repossessions to date, even though we've had a much more severe recession than the United Kingdom, for example. We've only maybe a tenth the number of repossessions. But up till now, that's been achieved through forbearance, which is an extend and pretend policy, if you like, and that can't go on forever. So what we're requiring the banks to do, not just in this code, but just in terms of general government policy, is to face up and realise the losses, and to cut deals with mortgage holders who can't pay, but also pursue those who won't pay, and that's an issue there as well.
Face when it comes up to losses, mortgage holders, hasn't happened yet.
It has a bit. There have been 80,000 mortgages restructured so far, and 76% of those restructured mortgages are performing. But what we said to the banks is, by the end of this year, 50% of non-performing mortgages need to be restructured. But there's another side to this too, and I think it's a false premise to suggest that somehow there's a conflict here between the banks on one side and mortgage holders on the other. You know, we need to bear in mind that there are 120,000 mortgages are so in distress, but there are 600,000 people paying their mortgages and struggling to do so and making sacrifices to do so, and they can't be expected to pay their neighbour's mortgage either. And we also have to bear in mind that all of us as taxpayers are now the owners of the banks. So, you know, any policy has to balance those facts as well, because as owners of the banks, ultimately we could be liable for any losses realised.
Tom, we're back in recession. For last year, the end of, and the beginning of this year, Tom Nevin of the Nevin Tom Healy of the Nevin Institute was telling us earlier, making a point that I'm sure will be made many times between now and Budget Day. Something will have to be done about this. Some of that prom note, at least some of the promissory note, gain needs to be spent. Otherwise, things will keep going on getting worse and worse. Is that a point or a view you're sympathetic to? Whatever about the details.
Well, you know, the road figures are bad. There's no point in pretending otherwise. We've had some good economic stats in the last little while. Very good tourism numbers. 20,000 more people at work than this time last year. But these figures are bad, and they reflect both a fall in exports due to recessions elsewhere, but also a lack of domestic demand in Ireland. And, you know, the budget measures like the property tax, for example, contribute to that. I think it's still June. The budget isn't until October. We'll have more indications before October. And, you know, we've a roughly 60 billion budget. If taxes come in 1% behind target and spending comes in 1% over target, that billion is gone. However, if things are a little bit better and taxes come in ahead of target and spending behind target, then we've more than a billion in flexibility. So it's really too soon, I think, to make those decisions.
The road traffic bill, which you've published yesterday, which is going to bring things like drugs tests in, higher penalty points for speeding and using your mobile phone, how much of a difference do you think it's going to make? And I suppose the key question is, when is this going to be the law applied on the roads?
Well, the key thing really is to keep up momentum. 2012 was the safest year on Irish roads since records began. We're now the fifth safest country in the European Union. But what we want is for Ireland to become the safest country in Europe. And this is really the next step in that. The bill will be published today by the Bill's office, and I'd expect to have it through the Dáil and Seanad before the end of the year and be able to commence it then.
All right, let's turn it. It's a good news day for your constituency, albeit a little delayed. This is the opening of the new Hansfield railway station on the rail line to Dunboyne, near Blanchardstown. As I say, the station was built 3 years ago. It's opening today. We'll come on to that in a moment. But Philip Brommel, RT's reporter, is actually at Hansfield station. Philip, busy this morning?
Well, Hansfield is very big. It's very shiny. But so far this morning, it's very empty. We've had almost as many trains as passengers since the first one arrived at 6:59. So while this is a very impressive building and a very impressive complex, it just hasn't been very busy. Now, of course, there is an official opening later this morning, which I understand the minister is attending. So I'm sure by mid-morning, it will be much busier than it is now.
All right, Philip, thank you very much. Minister, this was finished 3 years ago, but there was no road leading to it. What? Why did it take 3 years to build the road?
Yeah, that's right. It's been a bumpy road and a bit of a fiasco, really. The train station was built by the developers of that area, and after the economy crashed, the developers went into financial difficulty. They were supposed to build the road, but obviously because they failed financially, they weren't able to do so. So the government had to intervene. So I got the council together with the National Transport Authority and Irish Rail, and we had to negotiate with receivers, buy the land, which was in different parcels, change the development plan for the area, to facilitate the station or the car park and the train being built in the way that it is, and then had to find some public money to do it. So it's been just another example of cleaning up the mess that that the country is in. It is an area, of course, that was built during the boom. There's a lot of people there who paid over the odds for their houses, and were looking at effectively a ghost station for the last couple of years.
When you were in power, I think.
That's absolutely right. And, you know, if it had been as simple as signing a cheque or signing an order to open it, I would have done so 2 years ago, but it wasn't. Like I say, right. The land was in different parcels, there were receivers involved, courts, you name
just
it.
By the way, in the foreseeable future, this is on the rail line to Navan, potentially. Is that at all likely anytime soon?
I think in due course the line will be extended.
Well, apart,
Navan.
I know, apart from due course.
Look, the reality is that transport is struggling financially at the moment. It's costing us a lot to subsidise the existing lines. We're not in the position to build new ones, okay. But we'll look at it again in 2015.
I see your constituency colleague Joan Burton will be there as well, as you'd expect. Is this going to be a joint cutting of the ribbon, or how's this going to work?
Yeah, I expect so. Joan and I have different views on different things, but we work very closely locally and in the interests of our constituents. So I imagine there'll be two pairs of scissors brought out for the occasion.
All right, Minister, thank you very much. Leo Varadkar. It's 25 minutes past 8.
Now, 6 girls under the age of 18 in state care were assisted in travelling abroad for abortions on suicide grounds in the past 20 years. That's according to a front page story in this morning's Irish Times. Mary Minahan has that story. She's on the line. Mary, how did this information come to light?
Good morning, Rachel. This information was provided by the Minister for Children, Frances Fitzgerald. She was answering a parliamentary question from the Fine Gael TD, Billy Timmins, who originally asked the question of James Riley, the Minister for Health, but quite a while ago, actually. But Ms. Fitzgerald came back with the answer just this week.
Is anything else known about these particular cases?
Well, really, we know very little about these teenagers and their personal circumstances. They're minors in state care. So you're getting into the realm of speculation, I suppose, if you were to ponder where they might have come from or what might have happened to them. We know that in 4 cases a court hearing was convened, but that's all confidential.
Billy Timmins asked that question. He also revealed yesterday that he's going to be voting against the government's abortion bill. What's the thinking now on how many Fine Gael TDs are likely to defy the whip?
Yeah, it's rather uncertain at the minute, Rachel. I mean, obviously, there have been predictions from people like Brian Walsh that there could be up to 10. Now, Billy Timmins became the third person yesterday. He joins Peter Matthews and he joins Brian Walsh himself obviously the jury's out really on what will happen to people like Terence Flanagan, John Paul Phelan, John O'Mahony and so on. But I suppose everyone's waiting to hear what the Minister for State for European Affairs, Lucinda Creighton, will say when she comes to speak on the bill next week.
That's an interesting one, isn't it? She has been abroad, obviously, as part of the EU presidency, but she seems to be hinting that when she comes back she'll have something to say.
That's right. I mean, there is some speculation, Rachel, that the conclusion of the Irish presidency may liberate, really, the Minister of State for European Affairs to speak her mind on the issue, because, really, she has been, without doubt, the government's most senior internal critic, if you like, of this bill, and she has a big issue with the inclusion of the suicide clause. Now, what Billy Timmins said yesterday was he would vote for this legislation if the suicide clause was removed, but, you know, I suppose that the party, the Fine Gael leadership and the government itself couldn't have been clearer, really, that this clause will not be removed. So I suppose Ms. Creighton is in a bit of a difficulty there, having been so vocal on it in the past. Her husband, also the Senator Paul Bradford, has pretty much made clear that he will be unable to vote for this legislation, along with the Senator Fidelma Healy-Eames and a number of other senators potentially as well. And a few other TDs, I might mention, there's a question mark over, I suppose, people like John Deasy and Peter Fitzpatrick, also of Fine Gael. So this bill has quite a bit to go now.
Mary Minahan of the Irish Times, thank you for taking our call this morning.
Des is back with more sport and golf, I suppose, is on the agenda now.
Well, there's been over an hour's play, Cathal, on day two of the Irish Open Golf in Kildare. And I think there's been a bit of movement at the top of the leaderboard. We can go live to the course and join Greg Allen.
Yeah, leaderboard movement, but I'm afraid same old weather. Round two underway, those leaden grey skies with us again. Much breezier, though, than yesterday. So that means that yesterday's strong home challenge is what we're hoping for to drive the crowds up at the weekend. It certainly won't be the weather. Yesterday there were more than 15,000 here, and while that's a healthy sounding number for a Thursday, it was more than 30% down on last year. Out on the course right now we have the leader, Oscar Florin, a 29-year-old Swede. They call him sort of a journeyman on tour. He's never won a main tour event, never been higher than fifth, but he's playing fearlessly. He's made birdie on the first hole. He's now moved to 7-under, two shots clear of a group on 5-under, which includes Shane Lowry, who's out later, and the outgoing European Ryder Cup captain Jose Maria Olazabal has birdied his second hole to get to 5-under. But Michael Hogan, he has dropped a shot on his second, and he's now down to 4-under after 6, alongside the club professional from Monkstown and Cork, Kian McNamara, who tees off around noon. On the course now also, Paddy Harrington and Graham McDowell. Two pars for Harrington, he remains 1-under. A bogey on the second for McDowell, who's level par. Rory McIlroy, who tees off at 10-1, is back on 2-over. Yesterday he gave his most honest and revealing insight into his troubles right now on the course. After a 74, he admitted he couldn't find an answer to what's ailing his game.
I don't really know. I guess I'm just not, you know, no aspects of my game are really standing out that are strong. It's just, I don't know, I just feel a little lost at the minute.
I've never heard him use the words lost, referring to his game before. So McIlroy tees off at 10-1 in company, though, with Shane Lowry on 5-under par, just 2 off the lead, the home favourite here. He lives on Carton. He has a great chance, I think.
All right, thanks, Greg. I know how Rory feels. Spain will play Brazil in Sunday's Confederation Cup final after the European and World Champions beat Italy 7-6 on penalties following a nil-all draw. It continues a remarkable run for the Spanish, who are now unbeaten in 29 competitive games. League of Ireland action resumes tonight after the break. 5 games in the Premier Division: St Pat's versus Bray, Derry City versus Bowes, Drogheda versus Shamrock Rovers, UCD versus Cork City, and Shelburne versus Sligo Rovers. Well, it's a hectic championship weekend in the GA season, and unusually the action gets underway this evening. A big crowd expected at Dr. Cullen Park. The footballers of Carlow take on neighbours Laois in the qualifiers. Now, if you're interested, Kevin McStay is looking ahead to the weekend action, and earlier he predicted wins in the qualifiers for Laois, Tyrone, Louth, Fermanagh, Limerick, Galway, Armagh and Derry. So what about the 4 provincial semi-finals? Let's start with tomorrow's Ulster semi-final between Monaghan and Cavan.
It's a very difficult game to call, but I think Monaghan will improve from that horror game against Antrim, where Antrim were particularly poor, as I mentioned. Cavan, very defensive, but I think Monaghan will have the line-out to beat them. I think up front, Monaghan will have a little bit more than Cavan have been used to, and I give Monaghan a nod. Clonus will be a help as well, I imagine.
In Connacht, we have the replay between Leitrim and London.
The key issue for me is the health of Emily Mulligan. I haven't been able to find out where exactly he is in terms of his recovery. He's huge to Leitrim. He's probably their top forward. London will be... I suppose, well buoyed up by the effort last week, but I think they had the chance just at the end when one of their players fisted it over the bar. That ball should have been in the back of the net. There'd be no need for a replay. I think Leitrim will learn the most and Leitrim will win it this time around.
And that brings us to the doubleheader at Croke Park. The first semi-final in Leinster, Wexford-Meath.
Yeah, that's the one I'm working on, and I think this has the potential to be a cracking game because they're so well matched and they both had very good quarter-final wins. And I suppose the question for me is how well can both defences hold the respective attackers? That's the big question for me because I know Meath have been trying to put a bit more pace and jizz into their forward line. And they were impressive against Wicklow, you have to say that. But likewise, Wexford were very impressive too and experienced. But I'm going for Meath because I think they have the potential to make the greater improvement. Now, this could be awful tight and a draw in extra time, I wouldn't rule it out. But Meath maybe by a point or two, Des.
And then the big game of the weekend, Dublin-Kildare.
Yeah, and when I started looking at the lineouts, you know, really, both teams in many ways are newish enough. I know we never think of Dublin like that, but, I mean, the transition from Pat Gilroy to Jim Gavin is ongoing, but maybe further down the road than the Kildare transition of the younger players, you know what I'm saying, the under-21 players coming in. And they're both well bedded in, I think, at this stage. Kildare just maybe a greater work in progress, and I think they might be better suited to a long qualifier run. They've done that before, so to lose wouldn't be the end of the world for them. It'd be a big shock if they were to take out Dublin, but Dublin just have too much going for them. They're playing with massive confidence. They've again, you know, huge panel to select from. I just can't see Kildare being far enough down the road to take on a team of Dublin's stature at the moment. So Dublin to win it, but Kildare to stay alive and have a serious run in the qualifiers.
All right, thank you, Kevin. The All-Ireland Hurling Champions Kilkenny have made three changes for the replay with Dublin. Jackie Tyrrell in for the injured Paul Murphy. TJ Reid in for Lester Ryan. Aidan Fogarty replaces Colin Fenley. Earlier, Michael Dignan predicted a narrow win for Kilkenny and wins for Wexford, Waterford and Down. Well, after the drama of Wednesday, yesterday at Wimbledon produced very few upsets. Serena Williams won easily against Caroline Garcia. Novak Djokovic beat the American Bobby Reynolds in three sets. And that means that for the first time since 1912, no American man will play in the third round of Wimbledon. In racing, the Irish Derby Festival meeting gets underway in the Curragh, starting this evening at 5:25. The Derby itself will be run tomorrow evening. And to give us his verdict, we're joined now by Jonathan Mullen, Irish editor of the Racing Post. Morning, Jenny.
Morning, Des.
Well, Aidan O'Brien again has the favourite, no big surprise, with Ruler of the World.
No, he's dominated this race, Des, in recent years. Last year he won his 10th Irish Derby, and afterwards the photographer's got him to hold up his 10 fingers. I don't know what they'll do this year. He's got the favourite, Ruler of the World, unbeaten in three runs. Won a tricky race at Epsom, though it looked a small bit unusual in that the pace was very slow beforehand. He's unbeaten, he looks really good. He's the 11-to-turn favourite, and he probably deserves his place at the head of the market. But it's a really good race. I think genuinely this looks like a better race than Epsom. Epsom is an unusual track that doesn't suit everybody, whereas the car is very fair. It's a galloping track, and there's no excuses. This looks as if it might decide what the best mile and a half or in the three-mile division is this year. And the race received a real twist, if you like, on Monday, because Godolphin, who bought Libertarian, the horse who's second to Ruler of the World at Epsom, also added a pacemaker at the cost of €100,000 at a cap of rushes, which was slightly surprising in a way because there seems to be plenty of pace in the race anyway. As well as Ruler of the World, Sugar Boy, who was trained in the Curragh by Paddy Prendergast, he was bought also this week, but he likes to be up there as well, as does Ralston Road and David Watchman's Galileo Rock. There'll be no hiding place in this race tomorrow evening, Des. It looks like it's going to be a cracking Irish Derby, and it's very hard to get away from Ruler of the World. Epsom probably didn't suit him either. He was impressive, he is unbeaten, and he gives Aidan O'Brien a chance of winning his 8th Irish Derby in a row.
Okay, and I'm trying to see how he deals with that 11th one overall.
It's big toe.
Jonathan Mullen, thanks a million for joining us this evening. That race, by the way, is part of a 6-hour-long Saturday sport programme here on Radio 1 that also features the Irish Open Golf and all of the big GA games. In rugby, the Australian captain James Horwell has demanded a fair hearing after the International Rugby Board controversially reopened a stamping charge brought against him in the first test against the Lions. He is cleared to play in tomorrow's second test, but will have to face the music next week. In Athletics Ireland's Brian Gregan finished fourth in a top class 400 metres last night, just one hundredth of a second second off his personal best in that one. And in show jumping, Ireland finished fifth in the Nations Cup event in Aachen in Germany last night.
Dublin City Council is to vote on restricting charity shops from opening on Grafton Street. The council says it's trying to recognise Grafton Street's role as a premier retail street and has already placed restrictions on amusement arcades, bookmakers and sex shops, among others. In just a moment, we'll be hearing from the Chief Executive of Fundraising Ireland. First, though, here are the views of John Corcoran of the Irish Commercial Tenants Association.
I would be quite happy to see them on the street if they could pay their rents, which is highly unlikely. You know, it's very hard to take a position against charity shops. It's very easy to take a position against commercial shops which are unsuitable for the street, like burger shops, convenience stores, mobile phones, bars, bookies, which you wouldn't like to see on a premier affluent trading street in the middle of George in Dublin, premier street in the country. For them to succeed on Grafton Street, they'd have to be very professional and look good, and therefore it could be an attraction to the street. But traditionally, charity shops look a bit dowdy and uninteresting and uninviting. Now maybe they're changing and they're going to look sharper and better. And if they can afford to pay Grafton Street rents, good luck to them.
John Corcoran there talking to our reporter Fionnuala Corbett. With us is Anne Hanafy, Chief Executive of Fundraising Ireland. What do you make of this?
Good morning, Rachel. I think it was really good to hear John's points, actually, because they're kind of the very points that Fundraising Ireland and the Irish Charity Shops Association are making. There is a vote on Monday by Dublin City Council to say that charity shops can't even apply for planning permission on Grafton Street. What we are saying, when Fundraising Ireland is saying, is let them apply. And John had a very good point there, is that they have to, you know, adhere to the rules and regulations. They have to comply with planning permission. They have to look aesthetically attractive, or wherever that is in Grafton Street. We agree, Fundraising Ireland, the Irish Charity Shops Association agree with all of that. But we are saying is just let them apply for the planning permission. There's anecdotal evidence at the moment to show that charity shops are more popular than ever, especially during these recessionary times. They're increased footfall as well. Fundraising Ireland just put out research to show that a quarter of all donations are coming in from charity shops at the moment. I mean, that's absolutely enormous.
Didn't he raise another interesting point, though, which is this? Could a charity shop afford to be on Grafton Street? Because we know that the difficulty that's there with the price of rents. I mean, just listening to people talking about Grafton Street being aesthetically pleasing, I have a feeling there are a lot of listeners who'd raise a question over how aesthetically pleasing it is at the moment, because there are so many vacant units there.
Exactly. And the point about rent that you raise, again, I'll go back to what I said initially, is let them apply for planning permission. There might be somebody who will donate them the space. There might be somebody who will contribute to that space. But what we are saying is let the charity shops decide that. And as I said, it's an extremely important source of donations. And I would go as far as to say that charity shops at the moment, they're indirectly, you know, they're saving lives. They're helping people who are in a disadvantaged situation. You know, they're giving a voice to people that are unheard. That's how important charity shops are at the moment.
You're making some big claims for them, but just looking at the list of restricted shops, which the Dublin City Council has, I mean, they're talking, amongst others, about amusement arcades, bookmakers, Euro stores and fast food outlets. Though I have to say that one surprises me, because I would have thought that there were several fast food outlets
on Grafton Street. We all know who they are.
But don't they have a point in the sense that this is seen as the country's premier retail street, and they don't want to bring it any further down market?
What I said at the start was that Fundraising Ireland agrees that the charity shops should adhere to the rules and regulation and comply with the planning permission. But our point is they're not even being allowed to apply for the planning permission. And that's really important. As I said, they're a legitimate source of business. They increase footfall. The people are going in. There's nice clothes. People are going in to buy clothes in these recessionary times in charity shops. So they're good for the consumer, and they're an excellent source of donations for the charity.
Have you been talking to any any of the councillors who'll be voting on this next week?
No, we haven't been talking to any of the councillors yet. We're going to wait and see what their vote is. The Irish Charities Association, I know, did put in a submission on this as well, making the points here that I'm making today. But we're waiting to hear what the decision will be on Monday.
Are you hoping then that, a councillor or maybe a number of councillors will take this issue on board and maybe try to change the terms of the motion?
Yes, absolutely we are. That's exactly what we're hoping for. I mean, we just want to know their reasons. They're saying it'll detract from the character of the street, but they haven't given the charity shops a chance to prove that. You know, that's mm-hmm. our issue. So just give the charity shops a chance. It's really important for both the consumer and for the charities.
Well, listen, we'll be following this to see what happens next week. But thanks very much for joining us this morning. That was Anne Hanafy. She's Chief Executive of Fundraising Ireland.
The Haefe Literary Festival is held annually in the small Welsh town of Hay-on-Wye. It attracts many world-famous authors. Now, there are a number of spin-off festivals in various parts of the world, and the first spin-off in the Republic is going to open this weekend. This is the first ever Haefe Festival in Kells, County Meath, featuring writers. There's a huge list, but to give you an idea, Germaine Greer, DBC Pierre, Jeanette Winterton, John Banville and many others. Our North East correspondent Richard Dowling has been to Kells to sample the atmosphere in advance of what's to come.
Somebody Loves You in Sacramento. Although the flight of money on wires makes jumping this joint difficult, Somebody Loves You in Sacramento.
We thought it was impossible, to be honest.
John Fitzgerald, a director of the Haefe Festival in Kells, recalls how they set about getting this all to happen.
2 years ago we came up at a meeting with the Chamber of Commerce and we were looking for a festival. And a couple of people were familiar with Haefe and we said, well, maybe we try and talk to Haefe. And some people laughed and some people said, no, let's try it. So we sent a tentative email 2 years ago. And the fruit of all that effort is what you see this weekend.
John, along with a group of locals, have spent the last 2 years preparing for the coming 3 days. And as we walk around the town, he points out that this work has already brought tangible benefits.
With 52 different events, with Booker Prize winners D.B. Pierre, John Banville, and Germaine Greer, world-leading figures in literary society and literary coming to Kells in County Meath. And the amount of cooperation from everybody. Everybody has got in behind this event. Everybody in the county has got in behind the event. And that's, if nothing else, it has got the community galvanised to work together and to work for something that they have faith and belief in. And I think that's what's given us the greatest lift and has given everybody the greatest lift.
Lindy Cook is Managing Director of the Haefe Festivals and describes what their aim is.
The Haefe Festival is a real celebration of literature and ideas, and that's then coupled with music, laughter, comedy, and literature in its purest sense can actually encompass many, many subjects, whether that be science, the environment, many of which are actually represented on the Haefe Festival Kells programme this weekend.
So, what attracted them to the bid from Kells?
It's a very small place, it's a very compact place, and so it's a particular brand of people that make these festivals happen, that make these fiestas happen, and we found it here in Kells, and it's as simple as that. It's about meeting the right partners.
Europe is dead and all the talk is of burning bondholders and buildings. ATMs are glyphs in our throats, stones in our stomachs.
Neris Williams is a Welsh poet and now Kells resident. She's been to the Haefe Festival before and is looking forward to performing in her adopted home.
There's a lot of dynamism about the town as well. Haefe is actually a very small town, so you do feel that kind of footprint and that footfall of people actually inhabiting a space as well, and that was very important. So it was almost like this wonderful space had popped up overnight. It was like sort of a Disney palace of books in some ways.
But as well as being a literary festival, there's much more to see in Kells, including public art. Mark Smith is a community artist based in the town.
We've been running this art trail, which we call the Type Trail, for the last 4 years, but it's married well into the Haefe Festival this year, where we've chosen a word and we translate that word into as many different languages around the town. This year we're doing 22 art installations, working with groups as diverse from mental health daycare centres to youth groups to rehab care to all different groups, community groups around the town that have made different installations based on the word inspire. At the moment now, we're standing beside one of the installations, which is giant Meccano letters, 4 foot high, stretching across 25 foot on a gable end of a wall facing out into the main street in Kells. And we've decided to place this prime location, we've done it in Welsh, as a form of welcoming the Hay Festival of Kells. And the word is Us Brum Dully, and that's the translation of inspire in Welsh.
If somebody loves you in Sacramento, they'll write statements in their poetry, digitise love letters to declare, dear sir or madam, we can change your default into decency.
And according to poet Neris Williams, the event has already boosted the town, both physically and psychologically.
I think it's a very important step for the town. It's a dynamic step. You can see there's a kind of vibrancy, not visually what's happening here, but also a kind of a pride that we have a literary event here.
A farmer in County Limerick who sold 4.75 acres back in 2005 for €3 million has just bought it back at a rather reduced price. Donal O'Regan of the Limerick Leader has the story. Donal, what can you tell us about this land and about this farmer?
Yes, he's from a very well-known family in Limerick. And he, I suppose he got lucky, I suppose, in a bit of a twist on the Anglo Tape story this week. He sold the land back in 2005 at the peak of the boom for around €3 million. It was earmarked for a flagship car dealership, which unfortunately, like many things, didn't happen. It went to receivership. It came up for auction by GVM Auctioneers the other week, and Mr. Campbell bought it back for, as you say, the slightly reduced figure of €215,000.
So he has made almost €2.8 million, and he has the land back.
Yeah, and it's to be honest, from speaking to Mr. Campbell, he's a very reserved man, and he's like, he drives a 12-year-old car. He's not his flesh man by any extreme. And for him, I think it was more or less the fact that he was where he reared his children. He had very, very 20 happy years there with his family. It was a very lucky place for him. The opportunity came up to buy it back, and I suppose, why not? And while he says he has no immediate plans for the site, he's going to graze some cattle there. So I suppose it's a bit of a Celtic Tiger story from a €3 million buying it and then plan for a car dealership, is going to go back to the land and back to cattle grazing on it again.
As you say, it's a story that just encapsulates so much that's happened over the past decade. Is it known who bought this land back in 2005?
Yeah, there was a couple of names being bandied about, but I wouldn't like to say it just in case. But it was, we understand, earmarked for a landmark car dealership, I suppose, back in the days when everybody was nearly driving a brand new registered car, but unfortunately it was 2005, and not too long after the economy went into, as we all know, turmoil. And yeah, it came up for auction just 2 weeks ago, and there was three bidders. It started at 150,000, and it was bid up to 215,000, and the capital fell. And Mr. Campbell, as he said himself, it's actually unbelievable, was his quote to me. He's a very nice man, and a lot of people have congratulated him on his good fortune. And yeah, he has it back now for forevermore.
As you say, it's quite some tale. But Donal, thank you very much indeed for joining us on the line with that. Donal O'Regan there of the Limerick Leader.